It's 10 o'clock. You're tuned to KBOO Portland. Coming right up, it's Health Watch with Dr. David Naiman. Today he speaks with Mary Showman, author of Living Well with Graves' Disease and Hyperthyroidism. At 10:30, Scott Forrester hosts Earth Watch, and at 11 o'clock on Democracy Now!, more on Supreme Court nominee Samuel Alito and interview with former CIA agent Larry Johnson about Karl Rove and more on the legacy of Rosa Parks. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Cotton Cloud Futons, a locally owned business featuring futons and mattresses, frames, covers, furnishings, and accessories which can be made with organic and recycled materials. Cotton Cloud is located at 701 Northeast Broadway in Portland. Information at 503-335-0758 or cottoncloudfutons.com. And also by Foodfront, Cooperative Ghost Grocery, specializing in foods from local and organic producers. Foodfront is located in Northwest Portland at 24th and Northwest Thurman. For more information there, the number is 503-222-5658. On to Health Watch. The purpose of this program is not to prescribe a treatment to individuals. Listeners should consult their healthcare practitioner before attempting any treatment.
Good morning, happy Halloween, and welcome to Health Watch. I'm Dr. David Naiman, your host. Today's guest is Mary Showman. Diagnosed with thyroid disease in 1995, Mary Showman transformed her health challenges into a mission as a nationally known patient advocate. She has worked for more than 20 years in writing, advertising, public relations, and communications, and is the founder and editor-in-chief of several thyroid, autoimmune, and nutrition newsletters, as well as the Internet's most popular thyroid disease website. Mary Showman is the author of many books, including Living Well with Autoimmune Disease, Living Well with Hypothyroidism, and The Thyroid Diet. Mary Showman is back on Health Watch today to discuss her new book, Living Well with Graves' Disease and Hyperthyroidism. And if you have any questions about thyroid disease or hyperthyroidism in particular, you can call here on Health Watch 503-231-8187. Welcome back to Health Watch, Mary.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be back on.
So I would bet that most of our listeners have never heard of Graves' disease. So could you tell us a little bit about what it is, how common it is? Are people at risk for getting it?
Sure. Graves' disease is an autoimmune disease, and when we have autoimmune diseases, that's when our immune system decides that one of our glands, organs, tissues that we're supposed to have is somehow a foreign invader. So it starts to attack it inappropriately. And in this case, it starts to attack the thyroid. And what happens is the thyroid actually becomes overactive. And our thyroid, which is located in the neck, is the master gland of metabolism and the body's energy. So when it goes into overdrive, we'll often get an extremely high heart rate, high blood pressure, very rapid transit of food and diarrhea, hair loss. We can't sleep. We'll have insomnia. We may have tremors and our body shakes. We can have panic attacks and anxiety attacks. And so things just get speeded up, and it's a really difficult situation to deal with, and it's in some cases it can actually be dangerous or even life-threatening if it goes on for a while and is not detected or diagnosed. And it tends to affect women much more than men, about 7 times more likely, but men can get it. And it is, currently we estimate about 3 million people in the United States, the majority of them undiagnosed with this condition. And so it really is a definite problem out there, and a lot of people are being misdiagnosed as having anxiety or panic disorder, or in the case of some teenagers who can develop the condition as well, a lot of them are being told they're anorexic rather than being diagnosed properly, because rapid weight loss is one of the characteristic features that some people experience with this condition.
So I would imagine some people might go to their physician and come home with anti-anxiety medication or sleeping pills when, in fact, they have an underlying metabolic problem.
Absolutely. Or they may not even get that far with the medicines, and they may just be told, you know what, you're stressed out, you're depressed, you're anxiety, you need to go see a therapist. So a lot of people aren't even given medications to deal with some of their symptoms, or, in fact, shuttled off to a therapist for further evaluation for psychotherapy or some sort of behavioral therapy, when the reality is they need a blood test, they need an examination of their thyroid, and they need to rule out thyroid disease before anyone makes an assumption that it's a mental health issue that should be dealt with by therapy or mental health drugs.
Well, why do you think that physicians, or at least some physicians, are missing the diagnosis in the first place?
Well, I think there's a couple of reasons. One of the first concerns is really the issue that most of these conditions are affecting women. And so when women go into their doctor and they describe symptoms in an emotional way, so when we go in and talk about how exhausted we are because we can't sleep, or we're freaking out because we're just feeling stressed out and anxious, or the heart rate is up and we just feel like we're going to have a heart attack tomorrow, or my hair is falling out and I just can't stand how I look, we tend to be a bit more emotional in the descriptions. And when doctors hear emotional descriptions of symptoms, they very often will move right into the assumption that it's a mental health issue. This is how a lot of physicians are taught in the medical schools, and so they don't necessarily think physiological causes when they hear these kinds of symptoms. So I always really urge women in some ways to learn how to really discuss your symptoms in a bit more of a clinical, quantifiable way. So if you can't sleep, then you say to the doctor, look, I used to sleep 8 hours a night without any problem. Now I'm sleeping 3, waking up, and I can't go back to sleep. Or I, you know, am doing nothing different. I'm still eating 2,000 calories a day, doctor, but I'm losing 2 pounds a week. So you want to give them the specifics and as quantifiable a way as possible, and very often that will help the doctor take the symptoms more seriously and not jump right over to assume that it's some sort of a mental health issue.
Are there other risk factors other than the gender risk factor? Obviously, women have more, it seems like women both have more incidence of thyroid disease and maybe aren't taken as seriously when they go to the doctor, but are there other risk factors?
Definitely. If you have any family history of thyroid disease or autoimmune disease as well, because most hyperthyroidism is autoimmune in nature and coming from this Graves' disease condition, if you have any family history of autoimmune problems, that includes Hashimoto's disease, multiple sclerosis, rheumatoid arthritis, psoriasis, any one of up to 80 different autoimmune conditions, you are at an increased risk of developing Graves' disease and hyperthyroidism as well. Another risk factor is pregnancy. Being pregnant and the period after pregnancy are periods when Graves' disease typically is a little more commonly showing up in women. So you definitely want to pay attention to symptoms that take place during pregnancy or postpartum. Smoking is a definite risk factor. There's a chemical in cigarette smoke that has a very, very negative effect on the thyroid and can, in some people, trigger the onset of the Graves, if there's a predisposition to it, or can worsen it, and it definitely makes the symptoms harder to treat. And in particular, it can really aggravate the related eye disease that some people get called thyroid eye disease or thyroid ophthalmopathy, which is the inflammation of the eyes to the extent that the eyes will sort of pop out a bit. They may be a sort of a characteristic stare. They can sometimes people describe them as sort of buggy looking. But this is a very common problem that happens in some people with thyroid problems, particularly Graves' disease, and smoking makes it 10 times worse, and it actually makes it harder to treat with the various treatments that are available.
Let's take our first caller. Welcome to Health Watch. You're on the air.
Yes, hello. I had a mother and a grandmother. My grandmother had an operation for goiter, and my mother, she was too far. They didn't do it. Also, basal metabolism test, was that a weak? I remember taking that a lot throughout the years, I guess, to detect thyroid problem, basal metabolism test. I got a feeling it wasn't a good test. And
did you have a question?
Did you say arrhythmias can be a part of this?
Yes.
Heart arrhythmias?
Absolutely. Cardiac arrhythmias, palpitations, erratic heartbeat, tachycardia, which is a fast heartbeat.
Uh-huh.
Those are
so
all
if you have a cardiologist, they probably are not up on this, what you know about thyroid, because that's one of the things I've been dealing with through the years is arrhythmias.
Thank you for the call today. So Mary, I would imagine some people might come in with rapid heartbeat or panic-like symptoms and not get diagnosed with a thyroid condition.
Yes, even with a cardiologist in some cases, although a cardiologist would be more likely to really look for the cause of that sort of rapid heartbeat, or in some cases when people can actually have a risk of atrial fibrillation, which can be particularly dangerous to some people, or irregularities and arrhythmias that that can either be just more nuisance, or in some cases they can reflect some sort of a serious concern that needs to be dealt with more specifically. But anytime you have a family history of thyroid disease or autoimmune disease and you come up with any of these kinds of symptoms, you absolutely need to keep beating the drum with your doctor to say, look, let's rule this out. You know, even if the doctor says, no, I don't think this is a thyroid problem, you still want to say, all right, are you willing to bet your money on that? Let's make sure and let's rule it out for sure. And usually doctors then, if you really push it, they will then go ahead and do a complete panel to evaluate your thyroid. I think the caller mentioned something about the basal body metabolism test or the basal temperature test. And this is a test that involves taking your body temperature first thing in the morning when you just wake up. And the theory is that if your body temperature is extremely low, you may be hypothyroid. There hasn't really been a lot of use of that test to detect hyperthyroidism, because a lot of things can elevate body temperature. There's some practitioners who believe that this test is very accurate in detecting hypothyroidism. Others believe that it can be a help, but that it's not a deal-breaker test, because there are plenty of people who are hypothyroid who do not have a low body temperature. So I just wanted to comment briefly on that test. And you know, again, it can be part of a overall evaluation, but I always caution people to really be careful about anyone who considers this test a conclusive diagnosis all on its own.
We're talking today with Mary Shoman, the author of Living Well with Graves' Disease and Hyperthyroidism. If you'd like to join the conversation here on Health Watch, the number is 503-231-8187. One of the things that fascinated me as a naturopath, Mary, was you mentioned as one of the risk factors consumption of aspartame or NutraSweet. And I'd never seen that before, so I was curious, what was the relationship with artificial sweeteners and an overactive thyroid?
Well, right now it's primarily an anecdotal relationship, but we've got a lot of practitioners and a lot of patients who have reported that at the point that they started to use high quantities of aspartame or artificial sweeteners in particular, and you know, started drinking a lot of sodas, diet sodas, or using a lot of these artificial sweeteners, that they did develop autoimmune diseases. And there's a theory that if you have a predisposition to an autoimmune disease like Graves' disease, and you introduce something that your body perceives as a toxin, and some people's bodies perceive these artificial sweeteners as very toxic, that this may in fact be a trigger to your developing a full-blown autoimmune problem. And so, again, I don't think we've had a lot of studies that would hold up with the more conventional medical establishment, but it's certainly one of those things where you don't need artificial sweeteners, and, you know, if you don't want to risk it, stay away from it. There are certainly other options that people can use for sweetening that are much less likely to trigger any problems. And so I always encourage people to go to something like stevia, where they don't have that risk of triggering an autoimmune reaction with an artificial sweetener.
Let's go ahead and take another call. Welcome to Health Watch. You're on the air.
Hi. My father has Graves' disease, and he was told that soy can be a problem for his medication. I was wondering if you knew anything about that.
Okay. The issue with soy is it's a bit sort of complicated, and part of it depends on where in the process the caller's father is in the treatment, because some people will say, oh, I have Graves' disease, and it turns out that they had the conventional treatment, which is radioactive iodine, to basically nuke their thyroid into underactivity years ago, and they are now hypothyroid, taking thyroid hormone replacement drugs.
That's how he is, actually.
Okay, well, if that's the case, if your father is already underactive, mm-hmm. and he is hypothyroid and he had radioactive iodine to basically ablate his thyroid, then mm-hmm. he really doesn't need to be particularly concerned about soy foods, because his thyroid isn't functioning.
Oh, and good.
Soy foods primarily act as an anti-thyroid agent on the thyroid itself. So if you have a functioning thyroid and you start eating huge quantities of soy, you will make your thyroid underactive in some cases. Some people have this as a very definite side effect. It's actually something that can be used to your advantage if you're hyperthyroid and want to look at some natural ways to deal with it. Some doctors will give people anti-thyroid drugs and also tell them to eat a lot of soy foods, because that will actually slow their thyroid down. On the other hand, though, it also has a negative effect because we have a lot of people that think if a little soy is good, a lot is better. They start eating it day and night for every meal, and that can actually make you hypothyroid if you start out with a normal thyroid.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks for
You're welcome.
That was a great question. Well, that brings us to the issue of diet and treating overactive thyroid. And I think it's fascinating that soy is something to avoid if you have a low-functioning thyroid, but something potentially to eat more of when high-functioning. And there are other foods that actually have that same relationship.
Yes. They all fall into the category known as goitrogens, where these are foods that have an anti-thyroid effect that actually can promote goiter or promote enlargement of the thyroid. And what happens here is that the thyroid gets slowed down by a chemical process of the various components. Some of the goitrogens include Brussels sprouts, cabbage, broccoli, and a variety of different grains. Millet is very goitrogenic. And you know, there's a whole laundry list of various vegetables. But the key issue there is you have to eat them raw, and you have to eat them in large quantities. So I always caught people say, oh, I have a little broccoli, you know, a couple times a week. That's not a problem. And if you cook food, even to the extent that you just steam it slightly, you lose the goitrogenic potential. Where people can, though, get some goitrogenic potential is if they go to eating, for example, very, you know, large quantities of soy in its raw, unfermented kinds of forms, or if they're eating, you know, very large quantities of cabbage, for example. Some people even went on cabbage diets and found that they were having a slowdown in their thyroid, which actually then prevented them from being able to lose weight. But in thyroid treatment for hyperthyroidism, typically doctors will put people on a antithyroid drug, which will help slow down the thyroid, and they will have them add in various dietary changes and nutrients that can slow the thyroid down, with the goal of eventually weaning themselves off the prescription drugs and hopefully achieving a remission in their condition.
We have a couple calls off of the air, so I just got a question for you handed to me. This person was diagnosed with hypothyroid, went on levothyroid, and the blood levels were not low enough yet, and now they're having anxiety and feel like their heart rate is high, and they're having trouble sleeping, and they're also menopausal. And they're wondering if the medicine can cause this.
Well, those certainly can be symptoms of getting too much thyroid medicine. But there's a couple of other things that the caller should probably take into mind. Number one, if you're menopausal, that means that your hormones are already in a changing flux. And when you start introducing additional issues, you have a deficient thyroid, you start adding thyroid hormone back into the picture, that will sometimes destabilize all of the hormones. So it might be worth talking with a good practitioner who understands the idea of hormone balancing, because it might be the right time to add in a little bit of natural progesterone or some of the natural phytoestrogens to help try to rebalance things, because introducing the thyroid can sort of destabilize the whole process. It also might be a situation where there may be underlying adrenal stress. And if the adrenals are not supported, introducing thyroid just actually, it's like stepping on the gas while keeping the parking brake on. And that can cause that kind of revved up feeling without satisfaction of the thyroid symptoms. And then the other issue is simply that sometimes people don't react well to the synthetic drugs like the levothyroid. And this person might want to investigate with their doctor about the possibility of trying a different drug. Some people have a lot better success with the natural thyroid drugs like Armour Thyroid or Biotech or Naturethroid, simply because their system just tolerates it better. So it's not a solution for everyone, but for some people who don't tolerate one, it might be appropriate to try a different brand.
We have another question off the air. What is the relationship between high cholesterol and thyroid problems?
High cholesterol is very characteristically a symptom of an underactive thyroid. So if you are hypothyroid and your thyroid is not working properly, everything slows down, including the liver's ability to clear the cholesterol out of our bloodstream. And so very characteristically, we see very high blood fats, high cholesterol and high triglycerides in people who are hypothyroid, who are not receiving this proper treatment. It also is such that it can be resistant to drugs. So people may go into their doctor. The doctor says, oh, you need to be on a statin drug for your cholesterol. They go on the statin drug, and they are retested a while later, and their cholesterol level hasn't budged an inch. When that kind of thing happens, that's usually a good sign that the thyroid needs to be looked at. In people who are hyperthyroid, what we often see is extremely low cholesterol. People come in and they have 110 total cholesterol rating, just really phenomenally low numbers. And sometimes that's a good tip-off that the thyroid ought to be looked at.
Well, let's take another caller. Welcome to Health Watch. You're on the air.
Yes, just a minute. Can a person go back and forth throughout their life with hyper and hypo problems in their thyroid? Is that a possibility? And also, I have another question. Say for several generations, a grandchild, their relative from before, or relatives, have this problem, and say they, whether they're male or female, drink a lot of liquor or smoke cigarettes a lot, or eat a lot of sweets, or eat a lot of starches, and say they start having symptoms, and they go to the doctor, and because of their, you know, their diet or their what they put into their body, can that mask the problem and get misdiagnosed? I'll listen. Thank you.
Okay. Let's see. Now, can we remind me of the first question?
I think we just lost the caller.
Oh, okay.
So the second question, it sounded to me like bad diet and lifestyle, whether
yes.
that could potentially
yeah.
mask a
okay.
Thyroid.
Yeah, the bad diet and the lifestyle, these are issues that relate to the overall immune system, because anytime we introduce toxins into the body, alcohol, cigarettes, a lot of simple carbohydrates, sugar, she was talking about a bad diet, these are all factors that if you have a predisposition to an autoimmune problem, if you have a family history, and it sounds like what we're talking about here is somebody where there's a long family history of having a variety of thyroid conditions, you will definitely be in a position where you can certainly trigger the underlying autoimmune condition if you're doing things that are introducing a lot of toxins into the body. So whether or not it can mask it, not necessarily, because if you indeed have a blood levels that are changed, if you have visible symptoms like the eyes bugging out or the tremor or the high heart rate and things, these are things that are fairly observable. So you shouldn't be able to completely mask the symptoms. You may be able to be reducing some of the anxiety through drinking, smoking, et cetera. So some of the manifestations might be somewhat subdued or tamped down, but a good clinician should be able to suss out that this person's needs to have some sort of evaluation for thyroid conditions. And I remember the first question was whether or not somebody can go back and forth between hyper and hypothyroid episodes throughout their history, and absolutely. And, in fact, this is a real cautionary point that I always try to urge people to be aware of, because when much more common thyroid problem is Hashimoto's disease, which causes us to become hypothyroid. We have about 27 million people in the country with thyroid problems. The vast majority have the underactive Hashimoto's form, not the Graves' disease hyperthyroid form. But one of the characteristic symptoms when you have Hashimoto's disease is that the thyroid, in its effort to keep sputtering back to life as it gets chipped away at slowly but surely, will periodically go into hyperthyroid mode. And sometimes people go into the doctor in that hyperthyroid state. They walk in, they have every symptom down the book of being hyperthyroid, they test high with their thyroid. The doctor says, you're hyperthyroid, and they go in and do something that is absolutely irreversible, like radioactive iodine or, in some cases, even surgery to remove the thyroid. And people need to be aware that you want to have antibody tests done and other types of evaluations to make sure, for sure, that you are hyperthyroid and have Graves' disease and that you're not in a hyperthyroid phase of being hypothyroid with Hashimoto's disease. Because a lot of people will have that fluctuating back and forth. They call it hashitoxicosis. You switch back and forth between Hashimoto's and hyperthyroidism, and various stressors can swing you back and forth. So people need to be very careful about letting a doctor do something permanently irreversible to you during that phase if, in fact, you haven't been confirmed as a hyperthyroid Graves' disease patient.
One thing that I thought was interesting in your book, too, Mary, was that there's a difference from country to country, particularly between, I believe, the United States and Europe, regarding whether people need to be on antithyroid drugs their whole life or whether there's the possibility of remission and getting off of the medication.
Well, absolutely. And this is really one of the things that I think is a little bit unfortunate about some of the way that the endocrinology community views hyperthyroidism in the United States as compared to Europe, for example. In the U.S., the first course of treatment for someone who is hyperthyroid is almost always radioactive iodine. This is a pill or a drink of an iodine that carries particular radioactive properties, And the thyroid is very attracted to iodine. So when you drink or ingest this iodine, it travels to your thyroid and carries that radioactivity to it. So it's kind of like getting a radiation treatment, but just from the inside out. And it makes the thyroid usually, almost always, inactive and incapable of functioning, which then means that you've taken somebody who's hyperthyroid, treating them by taking their thyroid and making it inactive, and now they are going to be lifelong hypothyroid and require thyroid hormone replacement. In the U.S., the second choice of treatment is antithyroid drugs, which is a drug that can be used to help slow down the thyroid, modulate and calm down the immune system. And actually, 20 to 30% of people on antithyroid drugs will go into a remission. But very few doctors in the U.S. believe in using them because they prefer to go ahead and just get rid of your thyroid function completely so they can put you on the thyroid hormone replacement because they feel like it's easy, more easily to control. Only in rare cases in the U.S. do we have surgery, and that's usually if you're pregnant and can't take the drugs or the radioactive iodine, or you simply aren't responding to any of the other treatments, or you cannot tolerate the radioactive iodine for some other reason. But in Europe, almost always the first line of defense is the antithyroid drugs, and in fact, they will not perform radioactive iodine treatment on women of childbearing age or children outside the United States. So this is an area of controversy because, you know, frankly, a lot of patients would prefer to do something that might achieve remission rather than go to something that's drastic and irreversible like total ablation of their thyroid using the radioactive iodine. So I always, you know, urge patients to talk to your doctors and discuss the fact that you might, unless you're in an acutely dangerous situation with your hyperthyroidism, it might be worth trying the antithyroid drugs, adding in some natural approaches as well, and see if you can't be one of those 20 to 30% of the people who do achieve a remission.
I think we're going to try to squeeze in one more call before the end of the show.
Great.
Actually, I think we have the question off the air again. Problem with insomnia, no indication in blood that it would be thyroid, with lots of knots in the muscles, and she's wondering, is there still a possibility it could be a thyroid problem?
Well, there's certainly still a possibility, because when you hear no indication in the blood, that doesn't tell you a lot unless you know the specific numbers. A lot of doctors rely on one test called the TSH test, the thyroid stimulating hormone test, but this test doesn't always tell us completely whether or not there's a thyroid problem in the making. In order to really get to the bottom of it, you need to have what are known as free T4 and free T3 tests. These are tests that evaluate the circulating levels of hormones, and in particular, the T3 is the hormone that will often cause the hyperthyroid symptoms. And this person would also need to have antibodies profiles done, because we also know that long before the thyroid blood tests will show changes in the basic functions, the antibody test will show the autoimmune process is starting, and we can have a lot of symptoms even before the full effect is seen in the blood test. We can see it by knowing that the autoimmune process has begun, so you definitely want to take a look at that. When somebody talks about knots in the muscles, though, and insomnia, that also points me in the direction of wanting to make sure that they've had a complete evaluation for fibromyalgia, which is a condition that it can sometimes be mistaken for thyroid problems as well, and sometimes is actually there's more of a coincident risk of the two conditions together. So I would definitely have this person have a complete thyroid evaluation, take a look at all of those factors, and possibly even see a good practitioner who can do a complete workup to make sure that there's not evidence of fibromyalgia as well.
So I think we're going to try to squeeze in one more call before the end of the show. If you could make the question brief, welcome to Health Watch. You're on the air.
Hello, is that me?
That's you.
Oh, yeah, thank you. I'll make this really quick. I had absolutely wonderful success with acupuncture, treating some really serious problems I had with my knees doing damage with karate. And I went to a practitioner from China, and actually my entire thyroid metabolism changed, including the coldness in my appendages went away. The coloring in my face improved, and my knees totally improved. So I was wondering if you have had any information that shows some success stories with the use of acupuncture.
I have, in fact, heard some patients describe some success with long-term Chinese medicine treatment. Typically, it involves people who are really borderline, not really seriously hypothyroid or seriously hyperthyroid, but people who are kind of on the edge. They have some symptoms. Things are out of balance. And the balancing of the Chinese medicine, both the acupuncture and in some cases the herbal medicine, restores an overall balance, helps the immune system, and in some cases can help kick the thyroid back into the normal area and basically help relieve a lot of those symptoms. It typically takes time. I've heard people say that they have to go for several months before they start to see results. So it's not a quick fix solution, but it's certainly something to have in the arsenal of approaches that can be used from a holistic or alternative perspective for thyroid.
I'd like to just second what you said, Mary, because anecdotally in my practice, I have seen success with people who are willing to be patient with acupuncture, particularly if they're in the high end of the normal range with TSH. Getting their TSH from, say, 5 or 6 down to a 2.5 has happened sometimes just with acupuncture.
Mm-hmm. Great.
And I believe we're going to try to go one more call.
Okay.
Welcome to Health Watch. You're on the air.
Thank you. Is it possible ever to control hyperthyroidism with exclusive diet change?
Well, again, if you have a mild form of hyperthyroidism and it's not a very dramatic case, then some cases can actually be controlled with diet changes and the addition of some supplements. There are some supplements like carnitine and quercetin that in combination with a high anti-goitrogenic diet, anti-thyroid diet, may in fact kick a slightly overactive thyroid back into the normal area. Also very recommended would be an anti-inflammatory diet because inflammation is often at the root of these autoimmune diseases. So staying away from the very high sugar, the high carbohydrate, and simple, unrefined carbohydrates. We also want to look at moving towards the calming foods, things that like the essential fatty acids and the fish oils and the fish, avocados, that type of thing, because those all help calm down the inflammatory process as well. Some people have had success, but usually it's with borderline, and you always want to do it with the guidance of a practitioner because you don't want hyperthyroidism to very quickly become an out-of-control situation where heart rate or blood pressure become uncontrollable.
I see. And are any recipes or anything of that nature in your book?
I don't have specific recipes, but I have lists of all of the goitrogenic foods that can be used in high quantities, as well as a specialized protocol created by a terrific holistic MD who includes all of the supplements that he uses to help provide anti-thyroid support to patients with hyperthyroidism.
Okay, and you will say your website and all that information before you go off the air today?
Yeah,
yes.
We'll be doing that in just a couple minutes.
Thank you so much.
Well, that's a good segue, Mary. I'm sure because this show has piqued so much interest, people are curious where they can get more information. Maybe you can share how people can find out about your website, your newsletter, and where they can buy the book.
Absolutely. The book, Living Well with Graves' Disease and Hyperthyroidism, is available anywhere, you know, books are sold, local bookstores, but people can buy it at the online bookstores as well. A lot of libraries are carrying it, so you can get it there, too. There's information on the book online at my website. It's www.thyroid-info.com. That's thyroid-info.com. And I have a checklist that people can download for free of risks and symptoms for Graves' disease and hyperthyroidism. So that's a good starting place for people. You can go on, download the checklist, fill it out, take a look at it, bring it into the doctor, and hopefully that will be the first step towards getting properly diagnosed so that you can get on to being treated and really getting well.
Well, it was fantastic having you back on Health Watch today.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
We're talking today with Mary Shulman, the author of Living Well with Graves' Disease and Hyperthyroidism. Stay tuned for the rest of the Monday Morning Zine.